Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. Today, I got a good podcast for you. I spoke to a friend of mine. That's Hervoye from the Geopolitics and Empire podcast. If you haven't checked that one out, I would definitely recommend it. It's funny that I was just looking, and it was January 2020 when Hervoye did a podcast with Francis Boyle, Professor Boyle, and he was actually the podcast that broke the COVID lab leak idea. And so he was the first one to kind of published that, and now that's getting a lot of press lately, so that's kind of interesting. We didn't talk about that, but a lot of interesting people he has on his podcast, so we talk a lot. He's in Guadalajara, and so I thought I'd have him on. It's just kind of a friendly conversation, like we have a lot, and we talk about how life has been here in Mexico, and in the last year and a half. We also go into a little bit about cyber attacks and, you know, what is the possibility of that and what that would mean in the future. If, you know, it seems like that might be something that is happening more often and people are planning for. So we did talk about that. And we also went over about the kind of UFO disclosure stuff and what our take is on that. So I thought it was a good conversation. I hope you like it. And we're going to jump into it. But first, I want to talk about the sponsor for this podcast, and that is Borderless Health Insurance. Whether you're an expat, a digital nomad, or international traveler, you need to have health insurance. Paying out of pocket works with most standard procedures, but if you need to get to a hospital or have ongoing care, costs can get out of control quickly. Many people don't know that medical bills can get into the hundreds of thousands of dollars in places like Latin America, but they can, and companies that we work with process many such claims every year. If you are uninsured, you are risking being forced into an underfunded public hospital in case of an emergency, and these type of public programs are not meant to be safety nets for foreigners. So to get top-notch private care, you will need to provide proof of insurance or they will not attend to you at all. You don't want to depend on GoFundMe and the generosity of your friends and family if anything unfortunate would happen to you. Think ahead and make healthcare insurance part of your plan. Go to borderlesshealthinsurance.com to get more information and schedule an appointment to find the best plan for you and your family. Again, that's borderlesshealthinsurance.com. Don't be the next GoFundMe. And now let's get into the interview. Borderless. All right, everybody, welcome to another Borderless Podcast. Today I have on my good buddy, Hervoye. How you doing, man?
Estoy bien, tú?
muy bien. And so we're both here in Mexico. I had Hervoye on a long time ago. I mean, we're probably 5 years or something. That's how long I've been doing this. And Hervoye also has a podcast. He's in Guadalajara, and he's a geopolitics professor. And so he has a lot of good stuff on his podcast. Definitely recommend everybody check that out. But I thought I'd have him on again and see what's going on. So how's it going, man?
Things are all right. I'm no longer a geopolitics professor. I think in a month I won't be teaching anymore, and I'll just be working on the podcast full time. So, yeah. Otherwise, I ran back to Mexico from Kazakhstan last year when I saw, you know, what's going on with COVID-1984. So yeah. I figured Mexico would be the best place to kind of hunker down. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been, I mean, all things considered, I think Mexico has been a pretty, you know, luckily, I think we've been pretty good over the last year. I think, what are your thoughts on Guadalajara and how they've been dealing with it?
Well, I'm definitely not a fan of the governor here, Enrique Alfaro. He's working with the globalists, right? Totally. I mean, I discovered Guadalajara is a resilient city, which is a Rockefeller project. And then if you're a resilient city, you get money from the Rockefeller Foundation to develop the city into this globalist technocracy. So that really bothered me when I discovered that. And I see him every day, the governor of Jalisco here in Guadalajara, doing all of these things, digitizing everything, just really pushing the public transport, you know, all of these agendas. He's really pushing cash lists, public transport to get us from our away from our cars or freedom of mobility and all of that. But in general, things aren't too bad when you compare to other countries. In Mexico, the masks still bother me, but generally I don't wear a mask. I go to places that food places that don't ask me to wear a mask, so I buy food there. Apart from that, you can go out and about. And just to compare, you know, I was planning to go live in Croatia, and some friends in Croatia, when the lockdowns were at their highest point, they were not allowed to leave their municipality. You know, they couldn't go from one town to the next. They had to go online to the e-government, ask for permission. You know, if the algorithm gave them permission, a permission slip, then they can use that to go, you know, visit their grandparents in the village or something. Otherwise, there were like cops with checkpoints checking that you had this permission in Croatia. So again, my intuition to run back to Mexico was proven to be correct.
You know, and you know what's crazy is that there's actually a lot of people in situations like that. And, you know, to our, you know, unfortunately, we've known that this was going to happen, but it's just so crazy that now we look at it and it is accepted. Like, we don't even realize there's a lot of people in a lot of countries that now you need permission to leave the house, and you can only leave certain points of time. You can't leave the country. There's a lot of people right now that are still stuck in countries where you need permission to leave your country. And this seems to be, unfortunately, just like a permanent thing. I don't know. I guess people are just, that's normal now.
That's the thing that really bothers me, that this is being normalized. I was just reading yesterday, Israel is supposedly dropping the vaccine passport, but they emphasize, you know, it's two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward. So, okay, they dropped it for now, the vaccine passport, but they're still using harsh restrictions for entry and exit into Israel. I have some Mexican friends in Greece. Again, they're locked down in Greece. It's the same principle, like I said, in Croatia, that it was in Croatia. Croatia is kind of like the Mexico of Europe. So now things are a bit more relaxed in Croatia. But in Greece, they're still like, you need permission to leave your house or to go somewhere. So, and this is being normalized. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Australia is like that. You know, I don't know about all the restrictions in the different provinces of Canada, but Canada is pretty locked down. Chile is like that. You need permission to leave the house. There's still, you know, you can only leave a couple times a week. And the Philippines, I just saw this thing. The cops killed somebody for not wearing a mask. And like they had it they had like the military. You couldn't go in and out of each city, and they were going and like physically vaccinating people like door to door. The military. No, he just said, no, that's it. Everybody's getting vaccine and military is going to administer it. And that's it. And so this stuff is happening. I mean, you don't hear so much about it, and it's really crazy. And, you know, although we're getting to the point now, I think, and in some places in Mexico, wherever we find ourselves, some places in the United States, it feels like things are kind of back to normal. In a lot of the world, it's still not, man. And that's really sad.
I'm just wondering, I'm hoping, because they've initiated this program. I don't see them now stopping. And again, this is total dystopian technocracy, scientific dictatorship. There's no pandemic, nothing to do with a virus. By definition, it's not a pandemic. You know, the mortality rates is more or less the same. So it's not a pandemic. And my fear, at least in Mexico, things are okay for now. I'm just hoping, I'm just waiting at some point if they're going to start pushing harder in Mexico is my fear. And so we'll see. I don't know.
Well, the time that they would do it is when the vaccine is available for everybody. So I don't, you know, so right now the government has been handling all of the rollout. And I think it's at like 50, 55 and up or something like that, that you can go and get a free vaccine from the government. And I believe they're doing the Pfizer and AstraZeneca. And but as it becomes available for more and more people, then, who, you know, and then there's going to be some point in time when it's available for everybody. And then that's when they're going to be asking people, you know, why aren't you getting it? But, you know, honestly, I have not felt any or seen anybody pressure anybody at all to get the vaccine or anything like that. I think, you know, Mexico's attitude in general is just kind of like live, let live. And, you know, like the same thing with the masks, like you were saying, I mean, there are a lot of people in the street with, you know, walking around by themselves like idiots with a mask on. But I just, you know, I don't, and I don't anywhere. And nobody tells me anything, and nobody's shamed me. There was one guy that tried to shame me. It was kind of funny for him, because we were in a nursery, flower nursery, you know, buying plants for the house with my fiance, and we didn't have masks on, and there was like this big fat American guy with mask on, you know, like his beard coming out and just looked horrible. And you're standing there, and I had to pass him, and he was just standing there like this, and I'm like, you know, excuse me. And he was like, cubrebocas, maybe. That's what he said, something like that. And I said, dude, get the fuck out of my way. That's what I told him. And he was like, ooh. And he starts like mumbling and stuff. And then my fiance said, you shut up. Maybe you should be more worried about your fat body. But in like her Mexican accent. And it was pretty funny. And then he just like waddled away. He was like, whoa. Because the thing is like when there's no enforcement, what are they gonna do? Because they're not like going and tackling people, you know, the cops aren't here tackling people or doing anything really. I haven't seen really any enforcement of these type of stuff at all, really. It's just people that want to follow the rules and they think it's polite or whatever.
I think it depends on the country. They use different tactics. So in the countries where they could enforce it, like Canada or European countries, they have the COVID freaking police going around.
Yeah. No, I meant here. That's what I'm
saying. Here in Mexico, it's like, but the problem is they passed the law here where they fine the business if the business doesn't police the customer. Yeah. So like they have to then, you know, and so they just opened this really nice local fresh food place right near my house. And they asked me to wear the mask. They still allow me to wear it under my chin, which the few times that I do, I do that. But I prefer not to wear it at all. And so I will go, you know, 2 minutes further to a place that they don't. Even the guy working there doesn't wear the mask. So I go there freely, you know, buy food. And so, but I also just to add what you're saying that the vaccine push. I think this whole program it's got multiple angles. You know, vaccines is one of them. They want the vaccine passports and then the whole digitalization. So I'm fearing also in Mexico at some point, you know, now the biometrics, they're requiring for your SIM, you're going to have to submit your nationality, home, citizen
location,
number.
Location, like the location
And then, they force now banks to ask you on your apps or when you use your desktop or laptop to turn on geolocation. So there's like multiple prongs to what they're doing. So I think in the end, Mexico is the least worst place to be, but we still can't kid ourselves that, you know, this stuff won't be coming here, but it's still one of the least worst places to be.
Yeah. But I want to give another kind of example about it's kind of funny in Mexico to give people an idea of what, you know, like the enforcement. Okay. I have a friend of mine who's a bullfighter and he owns a restaurant here in town. And what do you call it? I forget the name of the. So basically the people that are going around and inspecting the businesses, it's a branch of the federal government and their authority is really, I mean, it's questionable. Okay. I mean, so they just come in with clipboards and they'll hand you a ticket and you're supposed to pay it or whatever, but they can't arrest anybody or do anything like that. And, the guy came into his restaurant and, this inspector, and he was saying, oh, you know, this is because he doesn't care at all about any of this stuff. And they were saying, oh, you know, whatever, he wasn't following the protocol and he was going to try to, you know, give him all these tickets and shut down the restaurant. And he got into a fight with him and he punched him in the face and broke his nose. and they put him in jail for the night and then he got out the next day. But it's funny, like, I don't know, that can only happen in Mexico, I think.
Yeah. But I still, I get what you're saying, but I've still seen them come in, the inspectors, and shut down the business. Like,
yeah, they
made
it, yeah.
They can't do that to everyone, but they've made an example of, like, it's a clausurado, right? Like, they shut down. And yeah. You have to pay, like, a fine. They think they told me, like, 80,000 pesos, something like $3,000-$5,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, yeah. But, yeah, I think you're right. It's one of the best places right now. It's one of the few places that, you know, people can travel to and is open. And I really think that, as far as tourism here, tourism is, pretty much back to normal. I mean, I even saw them doing, like, one of these festivals out on the, so one thing that has changed big time here for San Miguel is the festivals, because we have lots of different festivals. People come from the pueblos out, come in and have dancing and all kinds of pageantry and stuff like this. And that's one thing that's kind of, it's not like I always like to go where it was all packed all the time, but it was cool to have. And I like everybody seeing everybody having fun. And I saw them doing that the other day, so maybe they're going to start doing the festivals again. But the point is that tourism is almost back to normal here. And I think that once people, feel safe because they get the vaccine internationally, I think a lot of people are going to be coming here. We really had, like, as far as the real estate market here in town, it was pretty bad. At the beginning of 2020, the rental market, the real estate sales market, the vacation rental market, all just really, hit the bricks. And so you really have nowhere to go but up from there. So it has been going up. And as tourism has increased, it's been getting better. But I think that it's really going to go up big time when people feel comfortable, whatever that means. With the vaccine. So I think that people are going to be coming to Mexico in general. A lot of people now, I think every digital nomad is in Tulum or Playa del Carmen right now. It's like blowing up, I think it's going to continue. So it's good for Mexico.
Yeah, I hear people going to the beach now. And I hear there's a lot of people coming down to Mexico, especially like alternative media. The Agenda 21 lady, Rosa Quire, down in Mexico, Derek Broz of Conscious Resistance in Mexico, Daniel Estulin, the famous, he had his show, the number one show on RT in Espanol, the Bilderberg guy. I organized a conference for him here in Guadalajara like 4 or 5 years ago. He moved to Mexico. I think he's somewhere in Cancun, Tulum. So all these people who know what's up they're fleeing to Mexico. And I see land prices going up, at least in Jalisco. I don't know the rest of Mexico, but just for like farmland, land, the prices are not cheap. Houses, you got the prices of apartments and homes in Guadalajara are equivalent to the U.S. or even more expensive, which is insane. And just another comment, I was kind of shocked to hear that a whole bunch of hotels. They're planning to open a whole bunch of hotels in Mexico, like, build brand new hotels. And for me, that kind of, it was weird in the beginning because the whole idea for me is just the whole, what they want to do with the Great Reset and all of this is, I thought they wanted to destroy, the middle class and physical businesses and to promote, all the big tech online stuff and Airbnb, right? To replace like physical hotels with Airbnb, yellow taxis with Uber. And maybe I think that's true in maybe Europe or US and Canada, but at least here in Mexico, the fact that these hotels, they're going to be building a whole bunch of hotels in Mexico and other parts of Latin America. Maybe that tells you, they're going to keep Mexico as kind of like, as it is, where maybe the elites will be going on vacation in Mexico. I don't know, but I think that's a positive sign for Mexico.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, as far as the middle class, I think that, the middle class here is growing, but it's mostly driven by big corporations. So they still use Mexico as, as one of the places that's kind of like a good, labor center for the time being, but what happens is these companies move on quickly. As soon as like there is a middle class built, sometimes they just switch to another, place. But I know a lot of people here that were born very poor and, you know, went to find a way to go to college here and all that, and get a, they have an interesting system here where people get apprenticeship. I'm sure you know all about it in the university. And a lot of times they end up with a decent job directly out of college. And that's pretty cool. And so people, you know, they continue with that company and they have like careers making stuff, you know, cars and, you know, transformers and all kinds of actual things. You know, it's like a manufacturing, something that in the States you don't have too much of anymore. So, anyways, I think that at least for the time being, I've known a lot of people that have gone from, you know, nothing to being a regular middle class career here. I see that a lot. So,
yeah, I've seen the same. And yeah. It seems there's work, like even construction workers, albañiles, you know, you need to do remodeling or something. It's even hard to get, you know, just these, let's say, lower class construction workers, blue collar workers, to get an appointment with them, because there's so much work in those areas. So that tells you that, you know, there is a growing middle class in Mexico. So everywhere I go around here, people got jobs, people are working, buying cars, houses. And so,
yeah,
seems okay.
So, you know, I've had people ask me about this, in the Telegram group. And if people have not gone over there yet, please go to Borderless Blog Telegram group, or, you know, the page. And, people have talked about, you know, inflation. Obviously, you know, this is a big, big thing. Just spending like crazy, like drunken sailors, the United States federal government, and they've been able to get away with a lot of this. We're seeing inflation and all over the place, price inflation. So a lot of people wonder how that could, you know, affect other countries. And, you know, I mean, obviously that's a very complicated question and a lot of variables in there. And I mean, neither of us are economists, but I mean, you've talked to all kinds of people about this kind of thing. And like, so what do you think are some scenarios that might happen if we do see some, you know, big time inflation as they try to just, I mean, obviously the federal government of the United States is trying to get out of their obligation to Social Security, you know, all baby boomer generation, they can't continue to pay that. They can't continue to pay the debt. So they want to inflate this away, perhaps, you know, introduce, I think the central bank digital currency Fed coin is coming out like June or July. We want to get people on that, perhaps some kind of, you know, UBI, or if they're probably tried something like that. But how would that, I don't know if you thought about how that might affect that type of scenario, might affect, you know, you here, you know, the peso.
Well, I mean, it's global from what I'm seeing from the people that I've interviewed, you know, economists from different countries, you know, a wide variety of views and cultures. I'm thinking of the Finnish economist, Tuomas Malinen, who I've interviewed. I've, you know, interviewed Peter Schiff, I think, a year ago, other people. It's global. It's happening now. You know, I've been following because I've been living around the world. And so I follow what's happening around the world. You know, I've seen in Kazakhstan, I was just reading like a week ago, the food prices, you know, Kazakhstan doesn't have a lot of fruits or vegetables, but the few that they do, you know, potatoes and carrots and onions, the inflation for their own potatoes is like 10-12%. I mean, that's a lot. And so you're seeing it everywhere in the US, you know, people telling me that the price of the meat has like doubled. And so here in Mexico, I just noticed the garrafon, the water that we get, you know, they bring us these, the water was 35 pesos and it just jumped to 39 pesos. I mean, that's a huge jump. And so I think it's happening now, but people just aren't, I guess they're not paying too much attention, close attention enough to it, but I see it everywhere now. It's happening. The inflation is, it's big. It's a global thing. And so this is something I think we need to think about to protect ourselves. You know, I try to buy perishable, non-perishable goods as far out as I can. Anything I need to buy, I buy now, like to preserve the purchasing power, get out of debt, you know, all these things that you can do. But it's happening right now. And I think it's going to get much worse. You know, in the US, they're talking about the lumber prices that went up like 500% or 1,000%. It's happening right now. Huge inflation. And I was actually having a conversation about this with some local Mexican friends this week, and they're citing the Mexican government's numbers. And I'm like, are you kidding me? They're lying. All the governments are lying. You know, the Federal Reserve, the Mexican Central Bank, they're all lying. You can't believe any of what they're telling us. The real inflation number is much higher.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, like my fiance, she buys all the food, but she's telling me all the time about, you know, that a lot of the food has gone up, you know, drastically. I don't know how much. I mean, we're not talking about doubling or whatever, but, you know, it's been going up, 10-20%, depending on the thing. And she keeps really good track of that. So we definitely have seen that going on. So yeah, that's a good point you make. I think that it's good to tell people. Obviously there's the regular type of investment stuff we talk about on this podcast, you know, real estate, gold, you can try some crypto, whatever, land, skills, things like this, real assets. Another thing that's just an easy thing to do is think about what it is that you use and is, you know, not perishable, and buy a lot of it out in the future. Not only is that going to be good if there's going to some type of crisis where there's all kinds of crises, you know, supply shocks, things like this, but also, you know, you're going to use it. And so you might as well buy it. It's not going to go down in value, you know? You know, in times of deflation, people just buy what they, you know, consume at that time or, you know, just in time shipping and stuff like this. But when times of inflation, you want to be buying things sooner rather than later and get rid of your they're calling the dollar now, they call it cuck bucks. That's the so you want to get rid of the cuck bucks and buy anything you can.
Yeah.
So another thing, you know, I wanted to go over with you, and you know, because we talk about it, we chat about it, and that's you know, I think something that might not be on the radar so much of people is the idea of some sort of, you know, well, we've seen it already, some sort of cyber attacks or kind of a cracking down of the internet or even a financial cyber attack. And, you know, it's one thing to just be pie in the sky speculating about stuff, but, you know, the especially after this whole coronavirus thing, now we see how, and they see also, I might add, how powerful they, you know, they can wield power over the world, you know, through all their different propaganda and mind control techniques or whatever. And so now we're sitting here like, okay, now what do they have in store for us next? I guess we're at their mercy. So it's, you know, a lot of people are looking into a lot more what they've been saying in Davos crowd and the, you know, the Great Reset and all these psychos. So one thing that they've been pounding the table about, just like, you know, Bill Gates was talking for a long time, oh, there's going to be a coronavirus, there's going to be a pandemic, then there's going to be another one. And that another thing they've been saying is that there's going to be cyber attacks. And just like with this this weird thing that happened in the US, which left a lot of people without gas, I don't know how real or the whole thing was, but you know, supposedly they were some Russian hackers that demanded, I believe, one of these privacy coins, you know, like $5 million in privacy coins. And that was how the story went. And I guess there was another one against the Irish healthcare system. And I don't know what, you know, there's supposedly there've been a whole bunch, but they have been telegraphing this type of thing for a long time through another thing, kind of like if people are familiar with Event 201 and all these other drills that they've been doing for pandemic, they've also been doing drills for a cyber attack. The most famous of which is called Cyber Polygon, And so anyways, I know that you're familiar with this kind of stuff. And aren't there some other things, too, that kind of telegraph this type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Not much is going on in this realm. But then all of a sudden, when these global power financial elites announce, warn us about these things, the frequency starts to increase. So as you mentioned, like you gave two examples, but I think there are more. So the frequency has increased. And I just wanted to read, I had shared this article, How to Think Like a Detective, in my Geopolitics and Empire Telegram channel and other of my podcast channels. And it's interesting here. It says, quote, in the Sherlock Holmes novels, our hero continuously assails Dr. Watson, the man of science, about the merits of deductive logic. In fact, strictly speaking, Holmes's favorite logical approach is not deduction, which is reasoning on the basis of known facts, but rather what is known as abductive logic, which is the cognitive process of identifying the best possible explanation for a given set of observations. Abductive reasoning is widely recognized as a powerful mechanism for hypothetical reasoning in the absence of complete knowledge. It's generally understood as reasoning from effects to causes, and only rarely does Holmes engage in the deduction of which he speaks so highly. And so, one of the markers of these false flag events, right? We can go back to 9/11, Webster Tarpley, a geopolitical analyst who used to frequently be on and Alex Jones's InfoWars, but for some reason he's never, maybe they came to a disagreement. He hasn't been on that show for a long time. He compiled a list of like close to 40 simulations, war game simulations, right up to and on the day of 9/11, which simulated exactly what happened in 9/11. Like, how dumb do you have to be where there's literally dozens of these simulations simulating what literally happens? So it's a planned event. You can't get out of that. And same thing with the pandemic, right? The COVID-19. We had 2017, the SPARS pandemic, John Hopkins scenario, 2018, Clade X, and then 2019, you had a whole bunch, including in China. You had like half a dozen literal coronavirus influenza simulations the 2 years before COVID-19. Again, that had to be planned. How do you run half a dozen simulations? That just doesn't happen randomly. Or maybe one a year, okay, but half a dozen for pandemic? So I didn't have too much time, but I was looking at the cyber stuff. So as you said, we have the World Economic Forum in July doing the cyber polygon. NATO just ran a cyber simulation in April. So I think it was April 16. And then I was searching, I guess the U.S. Government Army runs, U.S. Cyber Command has an annual one called Cyber Flag. So they in 2019, Cyber Flag dealt with, it's interesting, they simulated a cyber attack against a seaport where adversaries used malware against the critical trade hub. So that was July 2019. So that's kind of like the stuff that's happening now. We had the Suez Canal, we had this oil pipeline, Irish healthcare systems, and so there's no
canal. There was one in Mississippi as well.
So it's funny again how they are simulating, and then it happens. Critical trade hub, that was 2019-2020. They worked with the Five Eyes countries again. They were simulating fake adversaries targeting virtualized industrial control systems. And so there's no news about the 2021 cyber flag, although the White House just put out last month, again, targeting Russia. And at the bottom of it, it talks about cyber flag 21-1. And I tried to search and there's no news about 2021 cyber flag. So you've got the U.S. Cyber Command doing these simulations, NATO, now World Economic Forum. And something interesting that's kind of, I'm trying to figure out, are all of the countries on board with this? Or, or are Russia and China part of the resistance? There's an interesting Twitter account called Nova Shpakova. I don't know if it's a she or a he, but I think she's Russian. She's a hardcore Marxist, but they have really good analysis And they keep showing examples of how, you know, the Russian Prime Minister, Mikhail Mishustin, is going to be part of this World Economic Forum events, and so is Russia's spare bank. And so it does indeed seem that, you know, even if we want to think that there's a holdout against this system globally, but it does seem that, you know, Russia and China are in on all of this. So yeah, it does seem they're preparing us for another cyber false flag. Even Pepe Escobar, the lauded Brazilian journalist, was commenting on this, and others are saying, you know, they're going to hold this in July. And you can bet in August, September, October, November, December, you know, January 2022, we're going to start seeing, you know, events related to this, just like we did with the COVID, you know, the half a dozen pandemic simulations before COVID, and then you get COVID. I think we're going to see the same thing with the cyber stuff.
Yeah, and in the last cyber Polygon thing that they did, how it came out, it was actually a financial attack. Well, they did several of them, but one of them is a financial attack where they go into large financial institutions and basically take a bunch of money out, and this causes a collapse in the banking system. So I mean, I want people to imagine that. I mean, obviously that'd be a crazy thing. So I mean, you're talking about just one day, many, many, many bank accounts are just empty, and it causes a cascading event where the FDIC can't back up those things, and then all the banks which are lend to each other kind of collapses everything, and basically you don't get your money. And you know, something like this obviously would make it easy for them to implement central bank digital currency. You know, if they have a digital currency coming straight from the central bank, well, then they can guarantee that, you know, this whole precarious this is what they'll say, you know, that this whole precarious banking system is not, you know, then you know you have your wallet, and we, you know, we'll help you out with that. And, you know, you're not going to lose your money because it's guaranteed by the law and all this. So that, you know, that would definitely be something that would help them. Also, you know, in the Middle East, in China, in a lot of places, you know, their internet is more like an intranet, in that you can only access certain websites. You can only do certain things. That's why, like, they use VPNs and stuff to get around it. But when I was in the Navy, you know, on the ship and stuff, that's the same way. You can only access certain websites. And we have a pretty free internet in the West right now. And but I think that, you know, obviously it behooves people in power to limit that. They want to limit. Obviously, we see with all the, you know, the crackdown on free speech on the internet, the censorship. They don't want opinions and you know, information leaking out that might hurt them, obviously. So how, you know, you want to control that. And so one way to do that is to control where people can go online and have a much more rigid regulations and all that kind of thing on where you can get information, and also on financial institutions. And, you know, I think that although maybe some of the, you know, getting people in used to using digital currencies through crypto, you know, that might benefit them a little bit to get them, you know, to help them with the blockchain and building and get people more used to using digital currencies. But I mean, there are many cryptocurrencies that can be used completely around law and, you know, doing things that are supposedly prohibited. I'm sure that there are many parts of intelligence agencies and all that kind of stuff that themselves use these cryptos to get around their own laws. So, but I think that they don't want a completely, you know, unrestricted use of these things. So that's another way that they can crack down on that, you know, just like with the cyber attack. Supposedly it was, you know, they wanted their ransom the one in with the pipeline, Colonial Pipeline, that they demanded the I don't remember what coin it was, but they wanted delivery.
It was Bitcoin. I think it was Bitcoin.
Was it Bitcoin? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was more of the only one unregistered ones. Well, they can use that to say, you know, to say basically, well, they've been saying for a long time that you know, Bitcoin's used to launder money, buy drugs and whatever. And you know, in my mind, that's a good thing. Both of those things are good things. You know, and so you know, laundering money just means you know, people that are not paying taxes, which is fine with me. And you know, buying drugs, okay, whatever. So they're trading plants amongst each other. That's fine with me. So yeah, so whatever. But they want to crack down on that, obviously, because they're tyrants and psychos, and they want to control everything. And so this would be a really easy way for them to do that. So I mean, I think it would make sense if, whether it's something real or you know, a false flag thing made up or whatever, that it would, you know, it would, they wouldn't want to let that crisis go to waste, so to say.
Yeah. I just did an interview. I posted it, I think yesterday, with Glenn Deason, an academic from Norway who wrote his book, Great Power Politics in the Fourth Industrial Revolution, Technological Sovereignty. So every nation now is building their own technological sovereignty. So each country is building their own Facebook, their own, you know, Russia is now not using Android or iOS anymore. They're building their own, you know, computer operating systems, their own mobile phones with their own Facebook, you know, VK, their own Telegram, you know, like a version of WhatsApp. China's doing the same. And some people don't know, there's a really great IT guy called Rob Braxman. He's I always watch his videos. They're like 20 minutes long. You should find him. And he was talking, he was the only one that I heard discuss this just a few months ago, saying that he saw some indications, some things that happened. He explains it in his video, that the US kind of like launched the first time its own like firewall, like Chinese style. Like they were doing some things that only the Chinese do, like regarding the shutting down their national internet. So it's like we're starting to see this stuff happen in the United States. And, you know, recently we saw AMLO, the president of Mexico, I think last year, say he wants to create that we create our own Mexican kind of social media, Facebook thing. So you see this trend of technological sovereignty. And I think each nation is going to become its own like digital prison system. So it's not going to be like this global internet as we know it. Each nation is going to lock itself down. And as you say, it's going to become like a national intranet. Maybe you use the VPN to connect globally, but this is the trend, the technological sovereignty.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I think that wasn't it, I can't remember exactly what happened with this, but in Australia, they were not allowing news organizations to post on Facebook or something like that. I don't know if you remember the story. And so I think that Facebook just said, well, forget it. We're leaving. We're not going to be available for people in Australia. And I wonder, like with Florida. So DeSantis just passed some things. I believe that if you can prove that you've been censored or something like that, even in the past, you can now in Florida sue the tech companies. So, yeah, I mean, another thing is how they would respond to that is probably just say, okay, well, we're not going to be available in Florida. And so then Florida would have their own thing. So that would be kind of a setup for that kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just fragmenting. Everything's just fragmenting and things are kind of realigning. And we don't know what's going to come out on the other side, but I just have a feeling it's just going to, we're moving towards a dystopian. I'm a pessimist that we're moving towards this dystopian authoritarian. And that's what the guy I interviewed, he said, he cites Edward Luttwak and these experts that saying we're moving towards, you know, fascism, authoritarianism. That's the general trend in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, if we're talking about decentralization in general, then, you know, I would say that's a good thing. That's what I want. I would like decentralization. But, you know, the problem is you don't want decentralization with a centralized cartel on top. You know, that's more like a Hunger Games situation, you know. But yeah, I mean,
So that's the big question is, are we going to have, you know, use the decentralization pull that technology offers us, for, you know, own, you know, sovereignty in different areas, people that, you know, have different ideas of where they want to live, how they want to live. And I mean, I think that's great and that's fine. But the problem is if you have just one controlling, you know, thing on top, that's only allowing you your freedom in these little areas, as long as you don't threaten them, which, I mean, it seems like it might be the case, but you know, if not, then that sounds great to me. But, I mean, I agree with you. I think that when you look at the current trends, it doesn't look great.
I think the best we can do is, as they say, become ungovernable, disengage, get out of these systems as much as possible. There are some people that are lauding all of these technologies. And as I say, like, I try to go analog as much as possible, disengage, you know, create your life as much as possible away from these systems. I can't have so much faith in all of these tech systems, because they all come from like Pentagon, DARPA, yeah, military, right? Internet, GPS, big tech, you know, Google, Facebook, seed funded by Pentagon and NSA, CIA. Amazon is like the biggest, they have the biggest contracts for cloud computing for CIA and Pentagon and DOD. And it's just like, Microsoft too, heavily linked to all of this. How is that going to liberate us? You know, they, as you said, they control the reins on these systems. So eventually they can do whatever they want with us on these. We're on their like farm foundation. So they can do whatever they want with us. So I don't see how we can use these against them. So for me, the point is like, get off of these systems as much as possible. And, you know, people talk about using like Bitcoin. Again, now they say that, you know, the IRS or whoever can now forensically trace all of the Bitcoins that have been used. They're not, Bitcoin isn't private. So how is that going to save us then? You know, I don't see how Bitcoin is going to help you. Maybe there are some of these private coins they're talking about now. I don't know. But again, everything's on the internet. I just kind of feel like if it's on the internet, it's not safe. It can be traced or whatever. So I've heard people say analog is like the only way to go as much as you can. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be what a lot of people have been coming to that conclusion lately. And the big thing that's kind of, you know, a downer for me is just seeing kind of people's reaction to a lot of the stuff that's gone on lately, because I mean, technology and all these things that we're talking about can be great. And, but if you have a brainwashed population that accepts authoritarianism and all this bullshit propaganda, then you're in trouble. You know what I mean? Because then it can be used for, you know, very bad things. And, you know, it's just what people do with it. So, you know, one of the biggest things we can do is kind of, try to wake people up and bring them real information. I think a lot of people, they don't, you know, they don't have the right information, at least in Mexico. I think that, you know, in the United States, it's hard to give that excuse, because you have all this information in English. I mean, all kinds of alternative stuff. And if you are any way curious, then you can go look stuff up. I mean, there's no, you know, so, but here, and there's not as much in Spanish. So I think that, you know, in the whole Latin American market, I think that's one thing that I've spoke to you about that might be, you know, a good opportunity is like offering some good information to in Spanish markets. But you know, so that's kind of the thing, is if people just go along with it, then we're in trouble. And that's, I think that's the biggest thing. It's not just that the technology is available and developed, but what is the general belief system, the societal narrative of you know, what we're going into. And they've been working hard on you know, for a long time now, you know, just get this the new, you know, the, a lot of the anti-capitalist people would call it the neoliberalism, you know, other people call it globalism. But this globalist culture through pop culture, through, you know, just indoctrination at school, you know, the universities, especially, you know, what they call this cultural Marxism or whatever is definitely part of it. The Green Revolution and, you know, it's kind of Gaia worship along with like no race, no religion, kind of John Lennon, you know, idea. And they have a lot of people that are you know, just accepting this kind of new world culture, secular, it's not really secular. It's kind of a weird religion of like, has to do with health and, you know, the world's overpopulated and all this type of stuff. And, so, yeah, I mean, if you just have like this big giant global cult of people, then that's, you know, the technology is not going to help.
Yeah, you know, C.J. Hopkins, American expat based in Germany, who writes all the time about this, very popular. I've had him on my show. He's great. He really gets to the nature of this totalitarianism. And, you know, myself as a history teacher, professor, I always thought, you know, what would it be like to live during, you know, World War II, the Great Depression? And I'm like, why did I ask that question? Now I'm getting to experience what happened in the Nazi Germany with the Germans who went along in another totalitarian regimes. We're literally experiencing it right now. You know, this whole COVID project, it's a Nazi eugenics fascist project. Some of the same, you know, the progenitors of people who were involved in this stuff in the Nazi regime are the same ones now. You know, Klaus Schwab, I think his ancestors are linked to Nazis. The same companies without which, you know, the Holocaust or whatever wasn't possible. IBM, you know, General Motors, Coca-Cola, you know, Ford Foundation, all these people, Rockefeller, who was backing Hitler ideologically and I guess financially, they're another ones providing the solutions for the COVID pass and all this stuff. It's literally Nazi. You can't get, it's a eugenics program. And we're seeing all the people going along, as you say, right now, as they did back then. And that's one, I think that's one of the key issues, as you say. And it's just like, I think over time, I've seen people now a little bit start to realize things aren't, you know, making sense. But that's one of the biggest problems. I don't know.
Yeah. And we just have to like use the, you know, we're like, you know, like the pipes in a jail, you know, people talking through the pipes or whatever. We have to use the, these, I mean, I don't want to be on, I'm going to be bashing YouTube on YouTube, but I mean, I, you know, I'd rather not be on Facebook and YouTube, all these things, because, you know, that's one of the reasons I hadn't been podcasting so much and doing on the channel is because, you know, I don't like the idea, you know, you spend so much time building stuff up and then they just kill your channel they don't even have to give you a reason. I mean, this is bullshit. And, you know, I've gotten several strikes on my YouTube channel and yeah, they could strike me and just take it down. So why am I spending all my time building their shit up? Just to get taken down. So that's why, you know, trying to looking at different alternatives or whatever, but it's hard to reach a lot of people when it's so fragmented like that. So, but that's kind of what we got to do for now. And so anyways, I didn't want to start, you know, wrapping it up. But I wanted to ask you before that, what do you think about this UFO stuff? You know what I mean? Like lately they're coming out with like all the military is saying, you know, that they're releasing UFO things.
I think it's just one false flag after another, you know.
Yeah.
You can see the trend, you can extrapolate. What is it that they want? Ultimately, where are we? And how do they get us there? Right? They want a world government. They want a global government. It's in all their documents going back a century. So they need to create a global threat to get us there. And you see, as you mentioned, you know, global warming, climate change, which is largely a fictional, you know, the global threat to herd us into this global institution. They've been doing that for ages. Then you have international terrorism. I don't think there really exists some international terrorist boogeyman, because we find that the U.S., they're all financing Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So it's the governments, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, U.S. financing ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We had the Iraqi general who said if the West stopped financing ISIS, tomorrow there would be no ISIS, in Iraq or the Middle East. So they're behind all of these, international terrorism, climate change, now the pandemic, and now it's UFOs. If you go back to that report from Iron Mountain, published in 1967, I don't think it was a hoax. I think it was a real, government think tank meeting where they said, again, we want to bring about this global system. We could use an exaggerated environmental threat. That was 1967. So they said we can exaggerate this threat from the environment. So we saw that actually happen. Then they said, we can use international terrorism. That happened. And the third one was, use a staged alien invasion. So we've got two of three happened. And now you see them talking about UFOs. So it seems like that's what's going to happen. And we've had all of these films and video games and everything priming us for this moment. And, I think it was 10 or 15 years ago, when I was getting into all of this stuff, I spent thousands and thousands of dollars on Amazon buying books and all of these things. And I was researching, I got to J. Allen Hynek, government expert who worked on Project Blue Beam in the 1950s, and the French Jacques Vallée expert, UFO expert. He helped create the internet, incredible scientist. Both of them came to the same conclusion that UFOs were a real phenomenon, but that they were not an extraterrestrial phenomenon, meaning they were not like extraterrestrial physical things coming from beyond Earth, but an interdimensional phenomenon, which for me, as someone who believes in the Bible, a Christian, in the spiritual realm, that makes more sense that they are, angels or demons, fallen angels, spiritual beings, doing all of this stuff now, because ultimately my interpretation is that, the devil doesn't want us to believe in God. And what's the theme in all of the movies in the UFO extraterrestrial, theory is that the aliens created us, right? Prometheus, the Vatican has even come out and said that, if it comes to be that aliens, they've even said this themselves, the Vatican, you can look this up, that it's possible that, we were created by aliens. So then, there is no God. We don't need a need for God or recognizing that we're sinners or we create sin. And then it's just, aliens created us. We can do whatever we want. And so that's kind of my interpretation of what's going on with the whole UFO stuff. And even some experts like Dr. Stephen Greer, who is saying it's going to be a false flag. So
we get alien. Yeah, can't wait for the first alien false flag. It's going to be great. And isn't that funny that it starts right after they create the Space Force?
I mean, there you go. Again, you could just see it's so predictable if you understand what's going on. I mean, it's so obvious.
Alien terrorists now. Great. All right, cool, man. Well, it's great having you on. I'd like to, have you on more regularly. It's been a while. And So let people know, you're at Geopolitics and Empire, and what else are you doing?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to be revamping the whole podcast and website. You can go to geopoliticsandempire.com, which will take you to GuadalajaraGeopolitics.com. It just sends you there. And I'm on YouTube for now, but everywhere else, Odyssey, BitChute, Mike Adams, Brighteon, the Telegram channel, sign up there. That's one of my favorites for now, and my Twitter. And everywhere else, as you said, we're fragmenting. Minds.com, Gab, I don't like Parler, and where else?
Float. Which ones have you been getting more traction on lately?
It seems, again, it's a long road for all of them. It's pretty slow, but I keep at it. Telegram seems to be one of the better ones. Oh, I forgot, MeWe.com. So MeWe is a sluggish, but... MeWe is not bad.com. That's like the Facebook alternative from Tim Berners-Lee, who helped create the internet. He's behind MeWe. So it seems like Telegram is the best. Twitter is the best for me so far. MeWe isn't bad. Minds and Gab and Float are kind of slow in terms of, getting people. So
okay, yeah, because I'm trying to get off of get on some of those alternative, like the video channels, and I think I'm on Library and BitChute right now, but trying to look around. So anyways, all right, cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, hasta la vista.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.